you develop fear as a way to avoid it. This is akin to a dog that's regularly beaten by its owner. In that scenario, you'll see the dog become fearful when its owner enters the room. The dog is on edge and nervous that any wrong move may provoke being hit. If you have harsh and negative reactions to mistakes, you're essentially cowering from your self-inflicted beatings. While you may not view self-criticism as a problem, at some point the fear of it emerged. The solution to beaten dog syndrome doesn't begin by trying to correct your fear. The fear comes from a reasonable desire to avoid self-criticism. Your task is to get to the source of the criticism and correct it. Self-criticism that's strong enough to inflict pain is typically a form of anger. Think of your tone when you provide feedback. Could it be described as harsh, punishing, or cruel? If so, anger is the emotion behind it. Start with the next chapter about anger and correct your self-criticism. You may find the section, Glorifying Self-Criticism, particularly helpful, as many of you with this problem at one point thought self-criticism was necessary to achieve your goals. Then once you've started to make progress, be patient with the process of removing your fear. If you take a beaten dog away from its owner and put it in the most loving, warm home imaginable, the dog doesn't instantly become happy-go-lucky. The dog needs to learn that the new owner won't cause him pain. In the same way, you need to learn how to react differently to your mistakes before the fear can go away. After getting a strong handle on the self-criticism side of the problem, you're in a position to break through the fear. But unlike the dog, you can't just replace your inner critic, the owner. Breaking through the fear is a twofold process. First, after making a mistake, you must work to decrease your anger. Second, assuming your anger level was lower, pay extra attention to that progress and push yourself to trust that you can handle the next mistake better. If you're organized and focused, you can create a cycle that can rapidly build trust. To be clear, you're not excusing mistakes or trying to feel good about them, but the way you handle mistakes determines the speed in which you learn from them. Reducing self-criticism and handling mistakes better is a matter of efficiency. The more self-criticism and fear that exists around the mistakes, the more likely your learning process slows or stops completely, and you continue to make mistakes. Ultimately, you want to handle your mistakes better so you can correct them faster. Here's an example of a mental hand history highlighting a fear of criticism. 1. What's the problem? Mistakes cause anxiety and fear. When I see another opportunity, I doubt that I'm right. And even if I get in, my sizing is a lot smaller. I'm on edge and hesitant until I get a win. 2. Why does the problem exist? It's natural to be critical of mistakes. In school, I grew up with the threat of criticism, and now I do the same thing to myself. 3. What is flawed? It's not working. It's a misguided attempt to get me to do better. Sure, I'm motivated to fix my mistakes, but they keep happening, and way more than they should. It's not helping me to consistently execute. The cycle doesn't stop, and it's a messy way of trying to get better. Of course I can do better, but if I continue to thrash myself for every misstep, I'm making things a lot worse. 4. What's the correction? Self-criticism didn't help me to reach my potential. I was poorly trained. I don't know yet how I should be talking to myself when I mess up, but I'm going to figure it out. 5. What logic confirms that correction? Realizing how much I was caught in a never-ending cycle has motivated me to fix the bigger mistake, self-criticism. I'm sure there will be ups and downs, but there's no way I'm going back. Weak process. Another reason a mistake can cause fear is having weak points in your process. For example, in making decisions, developing your competence as a trader, or adapting your strategy to the changes in the market. Uncertainty is amplified by these holes, even more so when you have poor discipline in your work ethic. You need to make improvements, but in the back of your mind, you know that you're not doing everything you could be. Either way, you can sense something is off and go into the day worried you're going to screw up. There's a lot of hesitation, and you don't pull the trigger as easily in setups that have been standard. You're quick to lock up profit and feel uneasy even after profitable days. In Chapter 4, we saw that prior to coaching, Alex, the options trader from Germany, was underperforming on big trades. Yet he would have never thought that anything about his process was weak. While it was obvious to him that his mental game needed work, after our first session, he uncovered several small process imperfections that culminated in his inability to fully capitalize on big opportunities. 4 to 5 times per year, Alex identified trades where he had high confidence that he should be making a large bet, but the fear of being wrong prevented him from doing it. He was paralyzed by thoughts like, what if I lose a big chunk? I don't want to lose that much. What if I'm wrong? I don't want to crash like that. He would pay more attention to business news and soliciting opinions from other traders, even when he knew it didn't help. These trades set up over days, and his mind went into overdrive, overweighting the risk of danger and discounting the value of being right. With 20% of his trades driving 80% of his profits, Alex knew that individual trades could have a huge impact, but he couldn't size these trades at a level commensurate with the opportunity. In our first session, we found the first piece of the problem. To Alex, the fear of being wrong in these spots meant that his edge had disappeared. Under normal circumstances, he could easily explain his core competency in 60 seconds. But if asked to do that while feeling the pressure of a big trade opportunity, his head would go fuzzy, and he wouldn't be able to articulate his skill set clearly and succinctly. This was the first gap in his process, and I encouraged him to spend time thinking about his strategy, accomplishments, and capability as a trader, so he could clearly explain why he would be right when he would spot these potential home runs. The exercise was easy to do, and writing down the numerous ideas flying around in his head added clarity to what constitutes his edge. Consolidating his knowledge like this created certainty around what he was doing, which automatically shielded him from anxiety. The clarity he gained from the exercise gave him the idea to experiment with cutting off all external sources of information. The first few days were weird, but then he noticed a big increase in his mental capacity. He was able to focus longer and didn't drift off. This second improvement in his process quickly led to a third. The absence of external information forced him to focus exclusively on his own opinions and intuition. The latter allowed him to increase his competency around his intuition, so he could tell the difference between it and the voices of doubt that held him back. He described intuition as a moment when several puzzle pieces come together. He knows what will happen next and just needs to wait for the signal. This experience is in stark contrast to fear, which included overthinking and doubtful questioning, as well as a very physical reaction, tightness in his chest and a knot in his stomach. Having these points written out, side by side, allowed him to see the difference in real time and act accordingly. These three improvements to his process, especially the last one, proved to be the keys to getting him over the hurdle. While a huge opportunity didn't come up during our sessions, I checked back in with him, and here's what he had to say. It was eye-opening. I realized what was happening and laid back for a few weeks to wait for the right conditions. Then when the time was right, I traded with no hesitation. I saw the moment. Everyone was on one side of the boat, and I knew the piece that would make it flip. I had already planned it out for the trade size, and it was on my sheet. The what, why, and depending on conditions, what percentage I would put in. When the time came, I just did it. Not only is Alex sizing larger, he's letting it run longer. Before, he estimated that he was capturing around a third of the potential profit, which was a big trigger for greed. Now the exits are planned. He scales 2/3 out at the juiciest point, and the last third is what he calls the let it ride part, where he assumes break even at worst. At Alex's level, given the demands for precision, these small weaknesses in his process proved to be a much bigger problem than he had realized. They were also an appropriate signal of fear. When gaps exist in your process, you'd have to be overconfident to not feel fear, not an ideal correction. Instead, understand that this fear signal is pointing to the need to improve some aspect of your process. Assumption of a mistake. A lack of complete control is the only real certainty in the market, right? But some traders artificially remove that certainty by assuming variance doesn't impact their results. They believe each loss or failure to profit as much as expected means they made a mistake. Intraday, that assumption triggers the tension, nerves, and stress that normally follow an actual mistake, causing you to make real mistakes, like getting a worse price because of hesitation or sizing too small in a juicy spot. By not accounting for the role of variance, You're basically overestimating your control. You're taking too much responsibility for your results. While I would rather you err on that side of the coin, versus blindly blaming variance, it's still a flaw that causes unnecessary mistakes. This pattern of overestimating your control usually starts with big wins. You had some trades where you got in and out at the perfect time and made the maximum on the trade. At that time, two things happened. One, you didn't consider positive variance, and whether you realized it or not, assumed the outside results were due solely to your skill as a trader. Two, you started to believe that you should get the maximum profit from every trade, or at least think it should happen more often. Now, when you make less than the maximum, you see it as you're having made a mistake, even if you made a decent profit. It may not be that black and white, but the more this happens, the more you start to hesitate and second-guess your entries and exits, risk calculations, or other inputs, because you don't want to make a mistake like that again. This desire for complete control creates a binary way of coding performance, correct or incorrect. And let's be real, this game isn't that simple. There's a lot that's out of your hands and out of your control. But there are ways of gaining more control, and one way is to change the way you code mistakes. The following chart, introduced in Chapter 1, is a great alternative to that binary coding because it describes three categories of mistakes. C game, obvious mistakes. Cause, mental or emotional flaws caused your emotions to be too intense or your energy too low. B game, marginal mistakes. Cause, a blend of weakness in your tactical decision making and mental or emotional flaws. A game, learning mistakes. Cause, unavoidable weaknesses in your tactical decision making. As a reminder, A-game mistakes are caused by something technical. For example, knowledge you haven't yet gained, or a recent change in the market you haven't yet identified. These are learning mistakes that couldn't have been prevented and are an inherent part of the learning process. In your B-game, you have some emotional chaos holding you back from your A-game, but not enough to fall back into your C-game. And there's some degree of tactical error, something that you need to learn but may not be super obvious. The errors found in your C-game, however, are so obvious there's nothing for you to learn tactically. Instead, mental and emotional flaws cause these mistakes. To fix this problem, you need to train yourself to identify and categorize your mistakes this way. Using this chart reduces the likelihood of assuming you made a mistake when you haven't. If you haven't already completed an A to C game analysis, write down all of the obvious mistakes and all of the marginal, slightly less bad mistakes you tend to make. If you can identify recent learning mistakes as well, great. If not, leave it blank. Then next time you think you've made a mistake, see where it fits on your list. If it doesn't fit as marginal or obvious, take some time to consider if the loss was a result of something that you didn't understand, or something new that would enhance your current ability. If so, it's likely a learning mistake, and fearing that kind of a mistake is the mark of someone who's afraid of learning. Obvious mistakes. The fear of an obvious mistake is exactly what it sounds like. You fear that you'll make mistakes that are so obviously wrong, it's inconceivable how they could happen. Even more vexing are the times when you know what you're doing is wrong, and yet you still do it. The shock and disbelief that you can't stop yourself from making mistakes that you know are wrong causes considerable apprehension and tension. You start the day already on edge, worried that if one thing goes against you, you're going to rapidly lose control and make some big mistakes. Even working hard to prevent these types of mistakes doesn't ease the fear. You don't want your efforts to be wasted and end up right back where you started, with no progress and just more fear. Your fear of an obvious mistake is appropriate because your ability to stop it from happening is low. But often traders are hyper-focused on the actual mistakes and not the cause of them. As I discussed in the previous section, obvious mistakes are the consequence of being so emotionally compromised you don't have a chance of stopping it. However, traders often fail to account for the mental and emotional factors that cause the mistake, especially with mistakes that are more obvious or basic. When they do make an obvious mistake, they don't work on it because they already believe they have the necessary knowledge to avoid that mistake. They write it off as a fluke or assume that the mistakes are easy to fix. To improve, you must understand these mistakes aren't an indictment of your trading prowess. Instead, put a spotlight on the mental and emotional problems causing you to make these obvious mistakes. For example, it could be greed, fear of losing, anger, loss of confidence, or overconfidence. These are the problems forcing you to make an obvious mistake in the first place. Then you develop a fear of obvious mistakes in response to being unable to stop them from happening. Fix the real problem, and you'll stop making obvious mistakes, and your fear will eventually go away. To speed up the process, do two things at once. Develop a strategy to fix the cause of your obvious mistakes, and rebuild trust in your performance so your fear can subside. Early on, you may still be on edge that these mistakes will happen. That's logical. The risk is still high. It's still a tenuous time. As you improve, you'll know when and why they happen and how to stop them in real time, and the chance of making an obvious mistake will be low. Fear of failure. Success and failure can be binary. There's only one team that wins the Super Bowl. Only one golfer wins the Masters. From that perspective, the sports world is mostly filled with failure, and that's the nature of competition. How you interpret failure, however, makes all the difference to what happens next. No competitor strives for failure, but the elite recognize the essential role that it has in their pursuit of greatness. Failure highlights weakness, both technical and mental. It can make you realize how badly you want to succeed, amplifying your motivation to invest more time and effort into further building your skills. Michael Jordan lost in the playoffs 6 straight years to start his career. Those failures drove him. They didn't stop him. He used what he learned to eventually break through and win 6 NBA championships. Those who strive to reach their highest levels don't shy away from failure. They embrace its role in helping them to be better and to level up. While success in trading can be less binary and more fluid than sports championships, having the right mentality about failure is no less valuable, even when rebuilding your capital or reputation. But if you fear failure, there must be a flaw in the way you interpret the meaning of failure. Whether or not you've actually failed in the past is irrelevant. The problem is how you view it. Failure means different things to every trader. For some, failure simply means failing to hit their target. For others, failure defines them. The fear of failure is not necessarily a bad thing. It can be an incredible motivator to work hard and do everything you can to succeed. And it can also get reckless traders to properly manage risk. But for some of you, the drive to avoid failure strains the mind and causes it to break down. The idea of failing looms so large that you overthink decisions, only trade when you feel perfect, make excuses for undersized bets, and obsess over losses and missed opportunities. You might freeze while a position is crashing, only thinking about damage control and how not to do something stupid. Or worse, you panic sell for a loss, only to see it retrace to your target. For traders with this problem, the tragic irony is that the pressure to avoid failing makes failure more likely. Since this fear is so common within trading and performance in general, there's a lot of existing recommendations written about this problem. You've all heard advice such as, seek small wins, embrace failure, failing is what teaches us to win, and learn from it and move on. These are accurate and logical. Nevertheless, they're not wholly helpful if there's an underlying and unidentified flaw behind your fear of failing. The following are the most common of such flaws, which, as we've seen, must be unpacked if you're going to conquer them. High expectations. The nature of high expectations suggests that they're difficult to achieve. So over the years, you've consistently fallen short. Failing casts doubt on your ability to perform up to your own standard, and eventually can turn into fear. The flaw here isn't that you aim too high. Aspire as big as your imagination can take you. The flaw is that you expected to reach your highest goals. Aspiration implies a process is required to get there, even if you don't fully understand all the steps you'll take yet. Expectations don't care about the process. They demand the outcome without question. Let's say you aspire to be the number one trader in your firm and set milestones, seek feedback and collaboration, review all your trades, and perfect your execution, all in pursuit of that outcome. You work the process every day and are relentless about finding ways to improve. From that perspective, if you fail, it sucks, but you'll learn, and the lessons will be used to chase your goal next year. If, on the other hand, you expect this outcome to happen, regardless of how hard you work or the market conditions, you'll be downright shocked, and view your entire process as a waste. Over time, if this or other failures keep occurring, a fear that you'll fail can develop and compromise the pursuit of your aspirations. While high expectations are often used for motivation, they can also cause self-inflicted damage. This was a problem for Vlad, a trader and owner of a firm in South Africa that applies algorithmic trading systems to their own portfolios. The systems work well and are extremely effective on their own. Where Vlad struggled was to identify the right moments for human intervention. Too often he meddled with the system at the wrong time. He was allowing his bias of market movement to supplant the system. And there was quantitative proof for the cost of not allowing it to run. To gain clarity on why these mistakes would occur, he took the fear profile and created a spreadsheet to track his emotions. As a systems guy, he liked being able to make his emotions more quantifiable and measurable. This allowed him to visually see where each mistake was happening in real time, flag the error, and then dig into it using the mental hand history after market hours. He also tracked his daily routine and how poor sleep or outside emotions affected his emotions in trading and vice versa. What he found included a continual desire to prove that he was right. Prior to our sessions, he went through a period of tremendous anxiety. He was always picturing worst-case scenarios, where everyone redeemed their capital, and the company lost all its money and blew up. He couldn't sleep, and when he did, he dreamed of trading. He described it as having no off button. He was in a terrible mood, continually staring at screens, fearing negative outcomes. While his emotional state had improved significantly by the time he and I started, he had yet to find the root cause of the problem. Fortunately, in the process of completing this mental hand history, we discovered it. 1. What's the problem? My overarching fear is losing value and relevance with investors. At what point do my investors say, "No, thank you"? It's no longer an input-output game where I can look objectively at the results and know that my system is profitable long-term, and it turns into an emotional thing because of what people say. I can't lose this amount of money because my clients are shitting themselves. And this feeds into a fear of losing value. 2. Why does the problem exist? If I looked at the steps I've taken in my life, it makes no sense, because objectively I haven't failed. However, I have failed at meeting my expectations of being a millionaire by 25. I truly believe that I'll achieve what I want in the long term, but there's an inherent fear of slipping off the path. I don't think I'm a failure, but the slight chance of failure scares the shit out of me. 3. What is flawed? My expectations of myself are just too high. I truly believe that I'll achieve what I want in the long term, but expecting to attain those outcomes within arbitrary timeframes has added an unnecessary burden. 4. What's the correction? To be much clearer on the value that I provide, I'm great at mitigating the downside risk, creating and deploying new systems, and growing the company as good CEOs need to do. 5. What logic confirms that correction? My expectations were blinding my perspective of my value as I overweighted my focus on results to the detriment of developing my expertise, value, and contribution to the growth of the firm. By looking at the root of his emotional reactions in a logical, structured way, Vlad was able to stop himself from interfering when he shouldn't. He was also able to take what he was learning about his emotions and restructure his role in the company in a more beneficial way. When he fully understood that he was, as a person, risk-averse and overly reactive to the emotions and expectations of others, he changed his approach to work. He stepped back from company processes like marketing, where he was too heavily involved in controlling, and chose to trust his people to run with it. As he said, it was like diversifying a model. I stepped out to focus on running my company, and it allowed them to perform better. Letting go and just focusing on my own primary output relieved a lot of my anxiety. Of course, there are no miracles, just hard work. Sure, he still has some control issues, but now he can sleep. The quality of his life is greatly improved, and so has his ability to focus at work now that he's not diluting brain power by trying to control everything. In addition to the specific steps that Vlad took, here are some steps that you can take to round out the negative side of high expectations. First, you need to turn your expectations into aspirations, as I mentioned in the fear of mistakes section about expecting perfection. That allows you to keep your motivation high by attaching to large aspirations, without the pressure caused by expectations. You also learn from mistakes faster because you accept and embrace them as part of the process. Converting to this perspective, however, isn't enough. The fear of failure is created in part because of the reverberations of past failures. To correct that accumulated emotion, you need to go back into your trading history and possibly your personal history to examine your past failures. This process can help you do that. Step 1. List all the things that you would consider to be failures, both within trading and outside of it. Take a look at that list and ask yourself which ones you continue to think about. Which ones pop into your mind randomly? As you think about them now, which ones still sting, where you feel the pain of the failure, perhaps even years later? Step 2. Focus on the ones that stand out the most or currently feel the most negative and examine why you failed. What were the mistakes you made? What did you fail to understand prior? What did you learn? How has it improved you as a trader or elsewhere? Step 3. Consider what it is about the failure that you're so hung up on and why. Do you think about how your life would be different had this not happened? Do you have regrets about it? Have you not forgiven yourself yet for the mistakes that led to the failure? Step 4. Use the mental hand history to work through the reasons you're unable to move past this failure, and then correct the flaws embedded in those reasons. Regularly review what you've written until you get to the point where you at least feel somewhat neutral about your past failures. You might eventually get to the point where you're happy about them because of what you've learned or how much money you end up making as a result. But the first goal is just to get to the point where it's not as negative. Undervaluing your accomplishments. You might fear failure because the pain of your failures have been amplified by paying more attention to them than your successes. This pattern is common with high expectations, where success is presumed to happen and doesn't get the attention it deserves. There's a lack of satisfaction, pride, sense of accomplishment, joy, or happiness from what you've accomplished. And when you do experience those positive emotions, they don't last that long. You quickly move on to the next target. I'm not suggesting that you must revel in your own greatness or risk becoming complacent or overconfident. There simply needs to be balance. Otherwise, you create a dynamic where failure looms larger than it should. The net result is an imbalance in your perspective created by an overdose of attention on failure. Here's what you can do to rebalance your perspective on success and failure. Write down a list of your prior successes and look for the ones that have tended to go unacknowledged or have been lesser valued. Do this steadily over a couple weeks, as it's unlikely that you'll remember them all at once. Why was this accomplishment something to value and appreciate? What made it challenging and not guaranteed to happen? What can you feel good about? Then go through the list again and understand how you succeeded. What did it take? What did you learn in the process? The goal is to treat successes and failures in the same way. Learning from failure tends to be easier because it's obvious where we fell short. But learning from success is in some ways more important, both practically and to rebuild your perspective. Regularly review what you've written to strengthen the knowledge to the point where it eventually becomes automatic for you to think about past successes from this new perspective. To be clear, this perspective emphasizes the knowledge, skills, habits, and processes that you've attained, and it forms the competencies to pursue the next goal. That will give you greater emotional clarity with your next goal and lower the fear of failing. Undervaluing your skill. You've already seen how uncertainty provides a breeding ground for fear. In some instances, that uncertainty exists because you fail to recognize your skills as a trader. Becoming more proficient at seeing your competencies can provide a base of certainty that cuts through the inherent uncertainty in trading and reduces your propensity to experience fear. You're not inventing or making up skills that aren't there. You're simply correcting the flaw in your perspective that's caused you to be unaware of them. Imagine you're standing on top of a mountain that's so high that you're above the clouds. Everything below you is obscured, so it seems like you're actually standing on a cloud. You've been there so long that you've forgotten that you're standing on a mountain. It feels like there's nothing solid beneath you, and at any minute, you could slip through the clouds and free fall back to Earth. But just then, the cloud dissipates entirely, and you see the huge mountain beneath you. You are, in fact, on solid ground. The mountain is the base of knowledge that you've acquired as a trader. You've climbed to a high level. Perhaps not yet as high as you want, but that's okay. When you ignore your competencies, you feel unstable when there's no need to. You've simply lost sight of the bedrock beneath your feet, and that breeds fear. No matter how high you've climbed on your proverbial mountain, take some time to solidify what knowledge, skills, and experience has gone unrecognized, and you'll improve your ability to handle uncertainty and reduce fear. Thinking you're a failure. What does it feel like when you fail? Do the losses and lack of success hit you personally and make you feel like you're a failure? If that's true, there's a lot more on the line than just money when you sit down to trade. Trading becomes an exercise in determining how you feel about your ability as a trader. To defend against branding yourself a failure, perhaps you've unintentionally reduced the amount of time you spend researching new ideas or working on your strategy. This is one of the unnoticed ways the fear of feeling like a failure shows up, by preventing you from giving it your all. Because if you did give it your all and still failed, it would cement your fate as a failure, and that would be too much to handle. The underlying flaw here is a belief that failure is a permanent part of your character. If you fail, it defines you. You're the reason. That's who you are, and that's how you will always be. When viewed that way, you can't see the possibility of success. At best, you only see success as a temporary escape from your fate. Maybe you hadn't thought about failure this way before. Viewing failure as a character trait is subtle and not something people tend to think about. But when you dig into the fear and the threat that failing poses, you'll see that to some degree, you do view it this way. When you harbor this belief about yourself, it's impossible to embrace the value that failing provides and think about it in a productive way. If you're a failure, there's no point in thinking about it practically. To begin cracking through this fear, you need to correct the illusion that this aspect of your character is permanent. Why do you hold on to that belief so rigidly? Again, refer back to the mental hand history as the tool to organize your thoughts. Here's an example. 1. What's the problem? I'm fearful that if I size up and fail, that's it. It's as if I'm standing on a cliff and I will either fly or fall. 2. Why does the problem exist? I know that I have to size up to achieve my goals and dreams. This is a crucial stage, and if I fail, it will feel like it's final, that I can't do it. 3. What is flawed? Sizing up, although crucial to long-term success, is not crucial for my trading performance. If it doesn't work out, it isn't the end, and I have a lot more opportunities. It will not play out as a fly or fall. I don't know how it will play out yet, but I know the cliff isn't really there. 4. What's the correction? Regardless of the size, every trade is just one opportunity to exercise my advantage. Sizing up is not an absolute. Win or lose, the journey continues. 5. What logic confirms that correction? This is just the next hurdle, one of many I've already jumped, and there will be many more after it to come. If I don't clear it this time, there will be plenty more opportunities. But let's see if I can clear it now. Choking. Have you ever failed because of a dramatic breakdown in execution, aka choking, like an athlete on a big stage? This is the trading equivalent of golfer Jim Furyk making a series of abnormally poor shots to blow the lead in the 2012 US Open Golf Championships with 6 holes left to play. If you've experienced this, it makes perfect sense why you'd fear failing. In big moments, have you been paralyzed, unable to think, and powerless to execute? The first time it happens, you can easily disregard it as a one-off, but then it happens again. There's no clear trigger. You don't know when it will happen, and worse, you don't know why or how to stop it. Those unknowns breed a fear that constantly lurks in the back of your mind. Perhaps this is why Furyk, despite being one of the best golfers of his generation, never won a major tournament after that, despite being in contention for several. In trading, choking is a complicated problem in that it happens in different ways and for different reasons for each person. But the commonality among them is the presence of intense emotion, most often fear, that rapidly overwhelms the mind and shuts down the ability to think. To correct it, you first need to identify the accumulated emotions central to the breakdown. They're the reasons you choke. Most often, there are multiple emotions and flaws to contend with, including anger and a loss of confidence. Dissect the problem and work through each part of it. Make sure to scale down your sizing or risk to temporarily lower the amount of emotion triggered from trading. Having less emotion to contend with decreases the likelihood that you'll choke. This will give you some breathing room to correct your emotional reactions in real time. When too much accumulated emotion is triggered, you don't stand a chance. You'll just get run over, guarantee another failure, and have to contend with the chaotic aftermath. Once you've proven you can make progress at lower levels of emotion, scale back up slowly, like you're rehabbing from an injury. Eventually, choking will become a thing of the past. As we've seen in this chapter, fear wears many hats and has many underlying causes. Using the mental hand history and mapping tool will help you ferret out the roots of your fear systematically, so you can improve your mental game more effectively. These tools will be, if anything, even more important as we move into our next emotion, tilt, aka anger. Anger may show up in nearly opposite ways of fear, and the feeling itself can complicate digging into its patterns. When you're ticked off, you're less likely to feel like doing the work you need to resolve anger issues. Yet if you want long-term resolution, you're going to need to peel back the layers. We'll do just that in Chapter 6, Tilt. Chapter 6, Tilt. Anger is a bad advisor. Czech proverb. For those unfamiliar with the term tilt, it's commonly used in poker to describe a player who gets steaming mad and plays really poorly as a result. The common refrain is that they're on tilt, and there are also some great derivations, like raging monkey tilt, to describe the poker player who is not only making horrendous decisions and losing a lot of money, but is also making a spectacle of themselves. As you can imagine, there's always a line of players waiting to play against an opponent in such a state. The term tilt didn't originate in poker. It actually came from pinball, where players would literally tilt the machine to avoid losing the pinball between the flippers or to control where they wanted the ball to go. I know some traders already use the term, and I say we go ahead and make it as ubiquitous in trading as it is in poker. It's more fun and descriptive to say I tilted rather than I got angry and made some terrible decisions. After all, if you have an anger problem, you might as well have a bit of fun when talking about it. Some of you already recognize how anger impacts your performance and are acutely aware of the costs. Anger builds steadily throughout the trading day, or over successive days, until the accumulation reaches a boiling point. You become more prone to take speculative trades, hold on to winners and losers too long, or become overly aggressive. You chase losses and rush into decisions. Explosions come out of nowhere, seemingly without warning. Perhaps you tilt without realizing it. You're an internal tilter. Your seething frustration and rage lie hidden, even from yourself. Because you aren't overtly angry like other traders you see. Your tilt is much less obvious. When you're steaming, you get quieter, tenser. You're like a pressure cooker about to explode. This could be a result of your style, your personality, or the way you carry yourself. Maybe you learned to keep it to yourself. Some of you work in environments where that kind of behavior is considered unacceptable, and so you quickly learn to contain it during the trading day. Tilt can be set off in a number of ways. The frustration can be with your results, the market, or yourself. You never get angry randomly. There's always something specific that triggers it. Maybe the market turned against you and the price action is moving in the opposite of your desired direction. Or when you went to hit the bid and close out the trade, the offer disappeared. Or you're annoyed because a fund is spraying the market with their order and it's moving the market dramatically. Then in reaction to those tilt triggers, you might click too many trades out of frustration. Think, fuck the market, this is bullshit. You've got to be kidding me. I can't believe my luck. Force trades, trying to recoup losses and end the day positive. Deviate from your strategy instead of letting things come to you. Take a bad setup that you know is wrong. Chase the market thinking, it can't go up or down more. Believing you know better than the market. How can they buy or sell at this price level? It makes no sense. It'll go back up or down. Take trades one after another without as much thought, almost as if the floodgates open once you take one bad one. After having those reactions, you may turn to strategies such as taking deep breaths, taking breaks, quitting, going to the gym, or positive thinking. These strategies are fine for temporarily managing tilt while you work towards resolution, but they're not a permanent solution. Remember, anger is the signal, not the real problem. To eliminate it, you need to first understand the underlying flaws you're battling. The nature of tilt. Anger is not inherently a bad thing. It can be an incredible motivator to act and improve, but it can also lead to the very performance issues that drove you here. Therefore, the first key to solving your tilt problem is to understand the specific causes of your anger. Anger is produced when underlying flaws, biases, or illusions conflict with reality. Anger at a basic level is a signal of this conflict. These moments of explosion become a chance to identify the real cause of your anger. Conflicts are most obvious when they exist between two people, like debating who is the greatest athlete of all time, the pros and cons of a tax policy, or making monetary decisions with your spouse. When a conflict accelerates, there's a misunderstanding or an inability to see another perspective. If there's an additional component added, like time pressure, frustration can build and cause the conflict to become unproductive, even confrontational. However, when you reconcile your differences and resolve the conflict, the anger dissipates. Sometimes the conflict was actually helpful, and whether it got heated or not, it led to greater understanding on both sides. In trading, the conflicts that most often turn into anger are between you and the market, and you and yourself. The idea of fighting with the market will make sense to you. An internal conflict within yourself? That may have you scratching your head. Have you ever felt like you were fighting yourself? That's a pretty accurate way of describing what's happening. Essentially, you're fighting against the performance flaws that I keep talking about in this book, such as believing that you're unluckier than other traders, that you should never make a mistake, or that you know what's going to happen. Logically, you know the right way to think or react, and you use that knowledge to fight against your flaws. For example, after losing 4 trades in a row, there's one part of you that expects not to take another loss, while another part understands how absurd it is to think that way. This is an example of conflict that you have with yourself. You're fighting to prevent the flaws from causing you to overreact to a loss. There are times when you're able to win the fight and keep the beast in its cage. At other times, your conscious mind is overwhelmed by the intensity of your anger and you lose control. These conflicts, among the countless others, don't have to become heated. Tilt is not an inevitable outcome. However, when the source of a conflict is unknown or unidentified, frustration starts to build and can turn into anger. Anger becomes the signal of a real problem. Unfortunately, traders typically see anger not as a signal, but as the problem in and of itself. That triggers the tilt of tilt. Essentially, you're angry because you're angry. Being pissed off that you can't control your anger. Tilting because you took a trade that you would never take in the right state of mind. Or tilting because you have no idea how to fix your tilt problem. This secondary anger is like throwing gasoline on a bonfire. This chapter will help you use your mind to put out the fire, to diffuse the impact it has on your execution, and prevent future fires from starting. Anger can go unresolved for weeks and even years. If you've ever tilted instantly, gone from feeling calm to a bomb going off in your mind, it's because of accumulated tilt. Tilt accumulates most commonly during a prolonged drawdown, where each day gets easier and easier to tilt, because the anger from the day before carries over. It's like a cup that steadily fills with water. Each day you dump water out, but some remains. That means less water is needed before it overflows. In practicality, you may blow off some steam after another bad trading day. But emotionally, you aren't completely reset. You show up the next day thinking positively, but then tilt faster than the day before. That's accumulated tilt, and it can lurk in the background and rapidly compromise your execution. Common signs of tilt. In a few ways, anger shows up in the opposite way as fear. In the previous chapter, I explained that fear takes our ability to assess risk, think, decide, trust intuition, and make predictions, and turns it against us. Conversely, anger makes those abilities inaccessible. When you're gripped by fear, you're often at risk for overthinking and second-guessing. With anger, the lack of thinking leads you to fire off trades without hesitation. If you're overwhelmed by fear, risk aversion is a big problem. Tilt and you become blind to risk. When you're angry, there's a righteousness to your decisions and thoughts, and you can't see the possibility of being wrong. This is the opposite of not trusting your gut when you're fearful, where you assume your intuition is wrong and go against it. For most traders, the signs of anger are obvious after they see the external carnage around them, losses, mistakes, overreactions to colleagues, broken coffee mugs, etc. But recognizing tilt afterwards is like seeing a trade you could have taken. The opportunity is already gone. You need a clear map of your tilt so that you can spot the signals in time to avoid the blow-up. Let's drill into the details of several common signs of anger to get a more detailed understanding of what happens when you're tilted. While these signs overlap and may seem similar, there are distinctions that can be helpful to more cleanly mapping the way that you tilt. Fixating. One of the hallmark characteristics of anger is your mind becoming so fixated on something that you're unable to let it go, even if it's to your own detriment. You see this most commonly when you're fixated on a specific outcome or past mistake. Fixating on an outcome is exactly what it sounds like. You know what you want, and you won't relent until you get it. On the one hand, this single-mindedness could be considered a strength, and in many other situations, such focus is a driver of your success. But when fueled by anger, it's destructive. This one-track mind forces such bad decisions that it can actually look like a lack of discipline. You know you shouldn't take another trade, but in that moment, making back your money is the only thing that matters. Another common description is tunnel vision, where you're like a lion locked into its prey, and the rest of the world is outside of your vision. Fixating on mistakes is similarly obvious. After making a mistake, you become obsessed by it, so much so that you think about it for the rest of the day. It may even eat at you for days and weeks from the back of your mind. Even an old mistake from years ago can trigger anger. You still can't believe how stupid you were. Your mind snowballs out of control trying to figure out what you did wrong. All of this affects your current ability to perceive what's happening in the market now. You know you shouldn't, but you just keep harping on it. Your mind won't let go, and that torments you more. Quick tip. Be clear on the things that your mind tends to fixate on. They become signals for you to wake up and realize that anger is putting your mind in a state of paralysis without you realizing it. When you spot that signal, have some physical action that you take, such as a deep breath or standing up, to reinforce your awareness before you start correcting the anger. Something has to change for your mind to start letting go. Risk blindness. Another common sign of anger is the inability to see risk or care about proper risk management. These are the two ways this sign can show up. Anger can blind you from seeing the risks that would be obvious in a normal state of mind. It's like you're driving a car and don't see the stop signs. You're in a blind rage, and you pass by the factors that you would normally consider, or you forget about the risk limits that you have in place. In the second way, you know the risk exists, and you may be aware of what you're doing is potentially wrong, but you're so tilted you simply don't care. There's a righteousness to your decisions, making the extra risk seem justified in the moment. You want what you want and fire away. Quick tip. While I frame the first version of this sign as though you were blind to all risk, there's still a limit. Figure out what risks you're unwilling to take. Then figure out the simplest correction that will allow you to suck less, as you learn from the inchworm concept. In the second version, if you get into a spot where you stop caring about risk, write down the common things that justify taking it. Adding that to your map will make it cleaner in the moment that you're attempting to convince yourself of something untrue. No consideration. Anger can shut down your mind so much, you don't consider the factors that you typically would when making a trade. It's more than just being blind to risk. This is about your decision-making process as a whole and how it disappears. Anger essentially removes the guardrails that normally guide your decisions and stop your impulses to, for example, get into a trade to make money now, fix a mistake, correct an injustice, or prove other people wrong. It's as if you're driving on a highway where all the lane markings and guardrails are removed, making it easy to drive into oncoming traffic. Your actions seem random, but instead they simply lack the normal consideration that typically provide a barrier to the entries and exits required for you to execute your strategy. Overthinking and second-guessing are excessive barriers caused by fear. Anger does the opposite and removes them. Quick tip. Since these barriers exist normally, write down the key factors of your decision-making process and remind yourself of them regularly, even if anger isn't present. This will help you to strengthen those guardrails in general, so when anger tries to break them down, you have a better chance to consider the trade more thoroughly. Toxic stories. When you can't get your mind to think in a balanced way about a loss, mistake, or situation, it can create a toxic story. You obsess about what happened and create a story about, for example, how stupid you are, how the market is rigged, or how the big firms are lined up against you. And you can't see it another way. Even the efforts of other people can't get you out of the negative loop your mind has found itself in. In some way, it's like the toxicity has pulled you underwater, and you don't even realize you're drowning in blame, regret, assumptions, and excuses. It's a chaotic mess. You can't think outside of yourself. You believe that you're right and convince yourself that your version is correct. Typically, these toxic stories will be repetitive either in that you'll say the exact same thing over and over again, or a theme will repeat in different ways. Write down the stories or the things you say. Recognition is always the first step, and will allow you to come up for air when you're drowning in anger and negativity. Mapping your tilt. Despite many commonalities, every trader tilts in different ways and for different reasons. Going through the mapping process is essential for finding the indicators that anger is affecting execution. This will enable you to recognize when your anger escalates in real time. Plus, it will help you uncover the flaws causing your anger and point you to the sections in this chapter that you should focus on most. Follow the steps below to help you create an actual document that will become the map of your tilt. Step 1. Over the next few weeks, pay close attention to your pattern of anger. Examine and capture the signs that anger has become a problem, including thoughts, emotions, things you say out loud, behaviors, actions, changes to your decision-making, changes to your perception of the market, opportunities or current positions, trading mistakes. Keep a document open on your computer or a notepad next to you while you trade, and take notes throughout the day. At the end of the trading day, review what you found and add additional details. Be as comprehensive as you can. And remember, one of the best times to better understand your tilt is immediately after tilting. The beginning of this process is best described as brainstorming. You're not going to identify all the details perfectly the first time you do it. And if this is really hard for you at the beginning, don't worry. Everyone has their own starting point. Use what you find and build on it over time. As long as you keep it on your mind, you'll continually learn more than you knew before. Progress is progress, regardless of the speed. Here are some questions to help you get started. What situations typically provoke frustration, irritation, anger, or rage? How does your body react when you're angry? For example, hands clenched, heat in your head, or smashing your mouse in a fit of rage? Can you describe the point where frustration becomes excessive and damages decision-making or execution? What specifically is going through your mind? What thoughts do you have? How is your decision-making process different? What are the earliest signs that anger has become a problem? Some of the specific signs you may experience include clicking a trade out of frustration or thinking to yourself, "Fuck the market, this is bullshit." You might find you're constantly bemoaning your luck and how you got screwed yet again. You start chasing the market because you assume it can't go down more. You might say things like, "The market is crazy. How can they buy, sell at this price? It makes no sense." Sometimes it feels like the floodgates open suddenly. You quickly double a losing position and take a trade without much thought, trying to erase earlier losses. As you identify the signs, be sure to also capture as many triggers as you can. If you need help identifying your triggers, look closely at the thoughts and things you say out loud. Remember, don't criticize what you say or think. Your thoughts are caused by a performance flaw that often directly relates to the trigger. Here are some common triggers. Getting into a position and having it immediately drop. Going to hit a bid and having the offer disappear. Losing several trades in a row. Making a mistake you know you shouldn't. Seeing that other traders made money while you were away from your desk. An unforeseen event blowing up a trade. Making a stupid mistake while you're angry, which then causes rage. Another trader questioning your trades. It feels like an attack on your intelligence. Thinking about the amount of money you should have made from a trade. Mapping your tilt is an iterative process. When you spot new details, even just slight adjustments, be sure to add them. Small details matter. They can make all the difference when progress is on the line and you have an opportunity to correct the cause of your anger. Step 2. Once you've gathered a lot of details, organize what you found by putting them in order of severity. Rank each detail on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 characterizes a slight frustration, and 10 is what happens from intense rage. At each level, identify details that clearly distinguish it from another level. As you assign levels of severity, also split them into 2 categories: the mental and emotional side of tilt and the technical side. They sit side by side. Level 1 on the mental and emotional side corresponds to level 1 on the technical side, and so on. Be sure to base this on your personal experience of anger, not how other traders deal with it. Everyone has their own range, and if you judge yourself against someone else, you're at risk of over or underestimating what you're capable of. That in turn will make your strategy less accurate. You also don't need to have details for all 10 levels. Most traders that I work with aren't able to distinguish their pattern of tilt to that degree. Do as many as you can, and do a minimum of 3. Here are some questions to distinguish the differences in each level of anger. What triggers the initial frustration at level 1? How does it then accumulate or increase to become anger or rage? For example, maybe a standard loss causes you to pound your desk once. Then you lose again, but this one feels more unjust. You can feel the heat in your head and a strong desire to force a trade. You're able to hold back, but your mind is aggressively seeking a pattern that looks like a home run so you can double your size. You find one, fire away, get quickly stopped out, and completely lose it. What details are present when anger is still small and manageable? What details are present when it's a monster completely disrupting your execution? How is your perception of the market different when your tilt is higher? What specific trading mistakes can you avoid at level 1, but can't stop from happening at level 10? Then take the details you've categorized and put them into a map like this. Tilt level. Describe the thoughts, emotions, things you say, behaviors, and actions that highlight each level of tilt. Complete at least 3 levels. 1. Gripping the mouse tighter. Moving it like I'm searching for a trade that may not be there. Clicking my chart, Dom. Not doing my analysis. Wondering, why is nothing presenting itself to me? Tension in my head. 3. Take a mediocre trade and get stopped out. If I didn't use a stop, price goes through where it should have gotten out, but I hold. Tension in my head turns into heat. 6. I increase position size, looking to quickly make back the losses. Fighting myself. You need to stop now. No, I can make this back. I fixate on just the price itself and not what the charts say. 10. Don't care, and trade all the way to a margin call, cursing at myself, smash or throw something, wanting to quit. Technical level. Describe the quality of your decision-making, perception of the market, opportunities, or current positions at each level of tilt. 1. Still able to identify great areas to take a trade, following all my indicators and charts, but considering subpar trades to get on the board for the day. 3. I look for areas that I can possibly scalp but are not in my predetermined areas that I analyze pre-market. End up taking the trade. Then take the same exact trade again or add to another losing trade. 6. Not paying attention to the bigger picture. Adding more contracts and blindly enter a trade with a lot of risk. 10. Gambling and just clicking buttons. There's no decision-making process. I don't know what I'm doing or why I'm doing it. This step may seem impossible if all of your signs of tilt are extreme. If that's the case, frustration doesn't steadily build and turn into anger. Instead, you explode out of nowhere. So you may lack the recognition at this stage to see the signs before you blow up. The smaller signs are there, you just can't see them yet. Pay close attention to the buildup, especially after you explode. The clues are there if you take the time to look. However, it's also possible that you have so much accumulated tilt, you're instantly exploding, which means you'll need to do a lot more work outside of the trading day to reduce the accumulation. Step 3. Now you have a solid draft that you can use while you're trading to recognize your pattern and quickly respond with the correction. Since these patterns can take a lot of experience and training to correct, don't revise your map until you get consistent evidence that it has permanently changed. Now use what you identified in this section to focus on the specific types of anger that are most relevant to your trading. I strongly advise that you read through all of them, whether they seem applicable or not, because you may identify issues that you didn't realize you had at first glance, and you may remember additional details to add to your map. Hating to lose. No one likes to lose money. You sit down every trading day with the intent to make money. Losing it, especially when it's your own money, isn't fun to say the least. While some traders can easily accept losing as part of this game, for others, that will never happen and shouldn't be the goal. Your goal is to get to the point where it doesn't cause rage. Your goal is to change how you react to losing because it's causing you to lose more. You may have a hard time accepting losses and think to yourself, the market can't possibly go this way for much longer. You try to make it work, buy more of a losing position, trying to recoup losses and end the day positive. You know you're in bad positions, but that fact can't get you to close them. You lose more and then force trades to make up for what you've lost. Anger blinds you, and you become convinced that since they've gone down by so much that you may as well hold out until they recover. Sometimes they do, and the reckless violation of your trading strategy is rewarded, making this mistake one you're likely to repeat. At other times, the losses mount and your anger explodes into the market. You can't give up. You'll do anything to make money or just get back to even on the day. You also may avoid trading for a few days if the losses are particularly bad. Quit for the day after getting back to even. Have a hard time relaxing at night because you feel like there's more you should be doing. Get pissed off that mounting losses have put you in a spot that you didn't expect. When the day ends or when you're able to pull yourself from the onslaught of tilt, your mind can be convinced of all the ways the losses could have been avoided. You obviously know what you should have done. That's clear as day. Sell here, not buy here. Simple. You instantly feel better about the losses, knowing what you should have done. Only this is a fool's errand. Knowing what is correct afterwards is fundamentally different to knowing what to do before. You know this, but a part of you can't help but indulge in the fantasy. While the goal is, of course, to correct tilt, to do that you need to avoid the excuses and rationalizations after losing, and instead figure out why you can't take the loss. Why specifically do you hate losing? Is it the feeling? Losing often feels terrible, can go on for a while, and even affects other aspects of your life, making you feel less successful in other areas too. Is it that you're overly competitive? Being fiercely competitive is a trait shared by many successful traders, but problems arise when your drive to win is paired with an inability to take a loss. Is it variance? Losing is a reality in any competitive environment, and that's especially true in trading, where it can be easy to underestimate how crazy the market can be at times. Variance is built into the fabric of the game, and while you'd like to be friends with it, perhaps deep down you hate it. Is it the money? Making money is ultimately how you're measured in trading. It makes sense why you'd hate losing it. You may also be worried about supporting yourself or your family, which makes losing money harder to take. Regardless of the reason you hate losing, the goal of this section is to help you lose less by correcting the anger that causes more losses. Trading is a long-term game. It's not about winning or losing each day. It's about executing the strategy that makes you money over the long term. And hating to lose, or more precisely, your reaction to losing, damages your execution and causes more losses. If you truly hate to lose this much, you certainly don't want to be the cause of it. While no one is ever going to fist pump while celebrating a lost trade or losing on the day, the following sections can help you to make peace with something that's always going to be a part of trading. Being too competitive. Trading is a fiercely competitive industry, so having an intense desire to win is more a requirement than a problem. But like a lot of things, too much can be problematic. You overreact to losses by overtrading, sizing too big, failing to properly manage risk, and jumping into unfamiliar markets to get a win or get back to even. You won't allow yourself to lose. Your competitive drive to win and achieve your goals won't allow it. Wanting to make money every day is not a problem. You're no different than the athletes driven to win every time they compete. The problem in trading is that making money is not entirely in your control in the short term. It's unrealistic to expect to profit every day. There are times when you lose money, but in retrospect, you'd make the same decisions again because you know it's profitable in the long run. Logically, you understand this, but in the moment when you lose, it's hard to see the bigger picture. Since this problem doesn't happen to every trader, why does it happen to you? To find out why you hate losing so much, it's often easier to first look at what you gain from winning besides money. Money is the scoreboard, but losing money is not the only reason why you hate losing. It's also what the money represents. Every time you trade, there's more on the line than just money. So it's worth taking the time to define what's on the line for you. Here are some examples of what might be critical to you. Your goals. Proving wrong the people who doubted you could ever make it as a trader. Ability to sustain a livelihood, pay the bills, and provide for your family. Your confidence as a trader. Social status. Praise from your peers or those you respect. Tangible results from the time, energy, and work you put into trading. Better career prospects and an opportunity to manage a larger book. The possibility of early retirement and getting out of the rat race. When you trade, you're competing to win whatever's on your list. When you lose, it's not just the money that's gone. You've also lost confidence, respect from others, progress toward your goals, or anything else on your list. You hate losing because there's so much at stake. To be clear, being competitive and having an intense desire to win is not a problem. You have goals, there's a lot on the line, and being frustrated when it doesn't go your way means you